Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Positively minded life, my gosh almighty. Boy, I have heard people cuss out different organizations, but today I want to put out a shout to some new listening audience at Verizon, because Eddie, also known as Fast Eddie, Eddie from Verizon came in, and without his help, we wouldn't have been on air today. So I want to thank him. And then he became a BAI audience right away. He said, really? He said, well, let me listen. I like that. I like that. I like when we pick up new audience. I like when people wake up to the idea that there's a different way of living other than the way that people normally live. You know, every now and then I sit and I'll pass by on a television and I'll look at a poker game, you know, where they play poker with each other and it's become a big thing. And I listen to the level of their communication with each other. And it's like, it's very funny how low they go. I don't mean base, but I mean they have nothing to talk about. Nothing. They have no way of talking to each other that's meaningful. They talk about cards. Did you ever get that feeling about being with people? Where you're with people and nothing significant happens because nobody is being, nobody's inviting anyone to come on down. Come on, let's be real. Now, very often women invite men to come on down, let's be real. But what they want to talk about is negative stuff and bad feelings. And, you know, if they're feeling bad, they say, why can't you be real with me? Which means, why can't you feel bad with me? That's very often. And very often men who are over worried and over, they kind of want people to get involved in their craziness too. They'll say, oh, I've got so much work that you have to understand how crazy I am. And the reason I kicked the dog was because I'm having this pressure at work. And then they tell their wives or their friends, how could you not worry about the things I'm worried about? And they consider they want to invite somebody to be on their level. Very often we want people to be on our level, especially when we're crazy. You know, especially when we're spinning our wheels about things that have no meaning whatsoever. I was looking out a window, we heard some shouting, and we saw a man who was a school bus driver having a shouting match to the nose. I mean, you know, near fists, near fighting over something that was absolutely, I'm sure, meaningless. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Today is going to be the last day that we'll be able to talk before the marathon starts. The marathon is a fundraiser that we do here at WBAI, where we raise money to keep this station on air. So next week, I'll be with you on Wednesday from 1 to 3. And we won't be able to take any calls when we're doing that. I have some special programming planned for you during that time. But today we do have a chance for some calls and some idea that I want to bring you. The idea is, if you're a kid, if you're a child and you grow up and you're growing up and you look around you, you say, well, one day I'll be a grown-up. So what is a grown-up? What is it? And you say, a grown-up is what mommy is. And a grown-up is somebody who goes around telling other people, now you shouldn't do that, and you shouldn't do that, and you shouldn't do that. So children, very often, when they're looking and they're trying to grow up, will scold their dolls. They'll take their dolls and they'll start yelling at their dolls. Now, bad doll, don't do this and don't do that. Boys will punish their boy dolls, if they have boy dolls, you know, G.I. Joe or something like that. And girls will punish their younger sisters in an attempt to imitate their parents. So we think imitation of our parents is what's going to give us the idea of how to grow up. I mean, if you're a lion cub and you're on the Serengeti and you're seeing a lion chase down food, and you're a pup or a cub, and you watch this, you say, ah, that's how it's done. You got to eventually jump on them and hold them and then do that thing. See? And that's, among animals, that's the way they learn. They learn by imitating their adult parents. Do we do that? Do we learn to imitate our adult parents? Well, maybe for as far as going to work and digging a hole and, you know, cleaning the house. But parents could be so nutty at times. Do we just imitate them? Is that the idea? Is the idea that we grow up and we say, okay, I'm going to be just like my mother. I'll be neurotic. Right? When you know your mother's neurotic. Or I'll be just like my father. I'll be obsessive compulsive. Is that what you think happens? Do you think we get an idea of how to be adults? No. Maybe we just say, you know, your parents are crazy. I don't believe them. I'll go to the church and I'll go look at the clergy and I'll imitate them. Right? Or I'll go imitate my teachers. My teachers must be the sane ones. The ones who are locking the kids in the closets and yelling at them and telling them that if they continue to be bad, they'll punish them somehow or tell their parents. Maybe that's what I'll become. I'll become somebody who threatens people. Maybe that's what's grown up. What is this maturity that we're looking for? Well, that's the question. What do you tell your kids? You know, you tell you're a father and you're worrying about your daughter because you... Two reasons. Number one, you form a romantic relationship with your daughter because you love your daughter, because your wife is kind of not very available to you or stingy with her emotions, or you're stingy with your wife's emotions. So you form a bond with your daughter, and now you want to teach your daughter how to be a grown-up woman, and you teach her stay away from men. Don't go out on dates. Don't stay out after midnight, mainly because you're being possessive, not because you're giving them good guidance. And mothers who do that with their children, they tell them, you have a curfew, but the curfew is not because it's good guidance, not because it teaches a child to be safe in the world or to make their own judgments. It's rules and restrictions because the child has no idea. And then the child grows up, and what they do is they give advice to everybody. They tell everybody how to be because they think that's what being a grown-up is. You know, most grown-ups, real, real grown-ups, most people I know who I would call my friend, they almost never advise anyone. They don't put themselves in that position. They just listen. So where do we get an idea of what adulthood is? And I ran across something in a very special place. I'll tell you the source of this by the end. You have to remind me to tell this source. But I'm going to go to Rudyard Kipling. Kipling wrote a poem. I don't know if you remember this or familiar with it. I'm going to read you the whole poem first, and then I think what I'll do is read it to you a piece at a time. In fact, maybe this would be nice to have a little music behind this. Kipling. Here's some Kipling music. If, said Kipling, speaking to his son, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. If you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too. If you can wait and not be tired of waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies. Or being hated, don't give way to hating. And yet don't look too good, nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your goal, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters, triumph and disaster, just the same. If you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools? If he can make one heap of all your winnings, and risk it in one turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again from the beginning, and never breathe a word about your loss. If he can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve you long after they are gone, so hold on and hold on when there's nothing in you except the will which says to them, please hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings and not lose your common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count for you, but none too much. And if you could fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And what's much more is you'll be a man, my son. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. That's Rudyard Kipling. The poem is called If. I-F. It's easy to get, easy to find. I'm going to go over every one of these with you. I agree with almost all of them. But I think it's kind of important, because who gives you an idea? Who gives you a model? Who says to you, all right, here's what you do. Here's the way it is. Here's what grown-up is all about, or maturity is all about. Here's, you know, you don't have to imitate other people. What's your goal? What are you shooting for? People ask me that in therapy. They come into therapy and they say, what am I going to be when I get done with this, you know? And I could say to them the same thing. I could say these very same words, except I would not say, and you'll be a man, my son. I'd leave that part out. But I'd say, when you finally get to where you got to be, you can keep your head when all around you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. Get that phrase. I mean, so if someone is looking at you and blaming you because they feel crazy, because they feel crazed, because they're, you know, they're just losing it, and they blame you and they point the finger at you, you can still stay calm. You can still see it for what it is. You could understand that you're being blamed, and truly, although you may be a participant, it's not necessarily your fault, and you don't have to react defensively. That's sanity. That's a way to be. That's kind of maturity. Here's the other thing Kipling put in his poem. If you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too. Now, if you work in a place where people don't trust each other, a competitive environment like a radio station or something like that, you know, and nobody trusts anybody. You know, because they're competing and they have a gender and all that stuff. Well, if you entered that kind of a thing, or if you were in that kind of environment, you could understand why people are doing it. You could make allowance for their doubting. And it's okay that they doubt you. See, for example, being a therapist. If you're being a therapist, people come in and they think the big issue is, do they trust you? But of course you shouldn't trust a therapist when you first meet a therapist, because you just met the therapist. See if they're worth your trust. It's not a big issue. And as a therapist, when you see somebody, especially somebody who doubts people all the time, you don't expect them to trust you. You don't demand trust. So if you can trust yourself when all else doubt you, and still make allowance for their doubting, that's important. I thought that was great. Now, if you can wait and not get tired of waiting, you know, I mean, getting tired of waiting is one of the big things, especially for certain people who always want immediate gratification. Let's say you love somebody who's not available all the time because of whatever reason. See, you love somebody who has mood swings. And 3 weeks out of a month they have they're there, and then 1 week out of the month they're gone, or something like that. If you could wait and say, it's all okay, I wait. That's great, and not get tired of waiting or get restless or get angry. Or being lied about. If you get lied about by people lie about you. You know, I mean, one of the things about being a politician, I was watching some of this. What people say about other people, especially newscasters, say about politicians, how they dramatize it. But even though, you know, I was watching Barack Obama in one of his things where somebody was saying something about him that absolutely wasn't false. But it doesn't make him say the lies in return. You see, if you are being lied about, don't deal in lies. If you are being hated, don't give way to hating. For example, if you, let's say you were running a school with adolescents, with acting out adolescents, kids who got in trouble, kids who went to jail, right? And they're in your home where you're supposed to take care of them. Well, these kids are going to hate you because you're the guy who's saying, you know, you can't go keeping knives and beating up other people. But it doesn't make you hate them. And now, the real catch of the poem, which I thought was great. Don't look too good, nor talk too wise. Don't go around boasting as if you are the wise man of the planet. And don't go around looking like you're the most beautiful person on the planet. Tone it down a little. You know, when you see people dressed to the nines in the course of a day, makes you wonder a little bit. If you see somebody who's spout who knows a great deal, but they're always talking about it, you know, it makes you know that they're doing it for a reason. Because wisdom is a beautiful thing. Wisdom is a thing you hold inside, but you don't necessarily speak. You don't have to speak your wisdom. You don't have to proclaim your wisdom. You don't have to preach your wisdom. You just have to be wise. Next paragraph of the poem, or the next stanza, it says, if you can dream and not make dreams your master. That's a beautiful thing, Kipling. What a nice thing to say, if you could dream and not make dreams your master, because there are people who only live in dream worlds. And their whole world is constructed around the dream. And then he said, if you could think, but not make thoughts your aim. Don't believe that your thoughts are real. It's good to be able to think. But just don't make your goal your thinking self. If you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools. You know, now this is a great test for people who become in some position of authority. You'd be amazed. I remember someone who used to work for me, who used to say things. They would say, you know, Armand wants so-and-so, and they would do that when they felt angry at someone. So they would take the words that I would speak and twist them so as to use them in some way against somebody. And you'll find that happens in your life a great deal. People twist the words you say to use them as a kind of a trap for people to fall into. Because if somebody told me that Ed from Verizon said something, and then I took that thing that I was told he said, and I based something on it without checking out with Ed, you know, I'd be a fool. Because only fools go by hearsay alone. So, how's that, Ed? If you can meet with triumph and disaster, meaning if you could be both have triumph and disaster, and now listen to these words, and treat those two impostors just the same. What does that mean? It means that triumph is an impostor and disaster is an impostor because they're make-believe. Disaster is never really disaster. And triumph is never truly triumph. If you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken to, and if you could watch the things you gave your life to broken, and stoop and build them up with your worn-out tools. Let's say you create something. Let's say I have a friend in some country who has a little store, a bodega kind of store. They had very little money, but they were so proud of their store. And one day some military men come marching into the town and they decide to just destroy it. And these people who I think earned maybe $3 a day, they just knelt down and they started picking it up all over again, trying to hold it together, you know, and they just, that was the way it is. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss must have been the game of the day. But, you know, every now and then you want to go for something. You know, let's say you're an actor or you're an actress or you're a dancer. And you put everything, or a writer. I know a writer recently who took everything and made a choice with her writing. And she just jumped for it and she won completely. She risked everything. She quit a job just to get that writing done and she did it. She did it. She took time off. But what if you do it and you lose? What if you write a book and nobody wants it? So then, according to Kipling, you start again at the beginning and never breathe a word about your loss. Don't go around complaining about who didn't appreciate your book. You know what I mean? If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew, you know what sinew is? That's your, like, this tough cords in your body. I think, when I think of sinew, I think of a kind of a thing you can't break. Sinewy. You know, thin people, you can kind of see those sinews coming through their skin. I think it's like when you have cartilage in meat, you know, you just can't. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve you long after they're gone, and what does that mean? When your heart's gone, it means, Kipling meant the power of your heart. Your youth is gone, your nerve is gone, and your sinew is gone. Your muscles are kind of turned to mush. But if they could serve you long after you're gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will to say, hold on. And if you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue when you're talking with crowds, that means, you know, maintain a sense of honesty even in front of a crowd, and walk with kings and not lose the common touch. If neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, and all men count, but none too much. Because I think that was part of what Kipling was trying to show his son. He was saying, you know, don't make anybody your hero. Don't make anybody so important that you can't afford to step away. And if you could fill the unforgiving minute, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run. It's a phrase, 60 seconds worth of distance run, and I think it means that if you could take a moment which is just unbearable and stretch yourself somehow, give yourself some kind of a, you know, to fill it with something, make it a distance run. And he says, yours then, my son, is the earth. And that's everything that's in it is yours. And that's the end of that. So what do I get from that? I'm sure you get a lot of interest in you to call and to tell us about it. So I'm going to want to hear from you again. And I think I'm going to do one more reading of it. Just one more quickly. Here it comes again. Okay. Rudyard Kipling. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired of waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you could think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same. If you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken, and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools. And if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it at one turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again at the beginning, and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing to it, except the will which says, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings and not lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, and if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. That's Rudyard Kipling. Now, where did this idea come from in me? Well, you know, as I've always been interested in man's psychology. We in psychology tend to study women a great deal because they generally are the more intelligent species. They go out and they search and they want to develop and they finally want to find out why they are the way they are, so they go to therapy. Men don't do that. Men are just, you know, kind of cut in the mold, and they rarely step up to the plate. So I've been kind of encouraging men, inviting men over the years to live a little higher life. Now, part of that, part of the lessons of life, is for a man to see that maturity is something that's different than adolescence. Adolescence is one way of being. Adolescence is, I want what I want when I want it, and I want it all the time, and I want to be able to have it, and I can't stand frustration, and I don't want any pain. And I want everything that I want, and I want to hold on to it forever. And, you know, it's like one of the things that is a sign of maturity is the ability to stand for pain, the willingness to face pain, if that's what it is, if that's what happens, if you lose something. You face the pain. You deal with the pain. I went to a dentist once who wanted to give me Novocaine, and I didn't want to be numb. I didn't want the Novocaine. So I said, no, do it without the Novocaine. And she said, well, how could I do this because it's going to hurt you? I said, well, I'll white-knuckle it. You know, I'll just grab onto the chair as hard as I can, and I'll go through it because I did not want to have – I was going out to a dinner, and I didn't want to be spilling stuff all over myself with a numb lip. So she said, I can't do it to you if you hurt. I said, come on, I'll get through it. You know, I'm not that brave. I really did hurt. It wasn't going to be that big a deal. But anyway, she did it, and I held on, and I whitened up. She stopped in the middle, and she said, I cannot complete this procedure. I said, why? Just continue. And she said, no, I can't let you have that much pain. And I said, hey, even if I'm willing to face the pain, you don't want me to. I'm on DeMille here with the positive mind. So there are certain pains that men can't deal with, and the biggest of all pain that men seem to have the problem with is separation. Separation from the people they attach themselves to. You think women hang on, you know, they have this image of women hanging on for dear life. Men are the worst at separation. They are just terrified of it. Adolescent men cannot separate. Adult men can say, I will be myself. And I will try my very best to be with you and considerate of you, and I will pay attention, but I am going to be myself. And if you leave me, perchance, because you don't like the way I am, I will suffer the pain, and I'll be willing to go through it. That's, I consider, one of the things that is the hardest for men to learn, to be willing to go through the pain. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little special music for you and Michael, who's back with us. And then we'll take your calls at 212-209-2900.
Come and you find me. Must you always remind me that my gal is gone? Hurry, evening. Can't you see I'm deep in your power? Minute seems like an hour since my gal is gone. Shadows fall on the wall. That's the time I miss your kisses most of all. Even though I try, my gal is
that's Jimmy Rushing with Dave Brubeck. What an amazing combination. I've played pieces of that from you before, pieces of that album before. It's just amazing. Well, but, you know, there it is. There's those blues that men sing. You know, oh, my gal is gone. It's over. I want to, you know, die. I mean, you get this, friends. Your mate or you are going to die. One of us are going to die. And that can't be the end of the world. If I die, my mate must go without me. My children go without me. It's part of it. But when you make believe it's not part of it, when you say, oh, no, 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 you know, that's it, it's over, you know, it's kind of this dependency, this image that you're not a being. So what is being a mature person? What is it? You know, and you think that, well, maybe somebody stands up on a stage and says, I'm a mature person, I want to teach you all how to be mature. I'm certainly a maturing person as I see it. But I see myself like a tree, you know, kind of like an oak tree. Here I am, I'm substantial. But, you know, next year I'm going to be bigger. Next year I'm going to learn a little bit. Next year I may have some worn out parts. I may get hit by lightning or something, and I may have, you know, holes drilled into me. But I'm a work in progress. The tree that I am now, I hope, will be a nobler tree next year. I hope I'll be a better tree. But it doesn't mean that I'm petrified, stuck in one place. So there are no teachers. You understand? I'm not a teacher. There are no true teachers. There are just people who could teach as much as they've learned in the place that they're at right now. And if you look at them closely, you'll see kinks in their armor. You'll see things wrong with them. You'll see flaws. It's all fine. It's all fine. You can have flaws. You know, just don't take me to the next step. Just help me along. Let me see the step you took. 212-209-2900 is our number, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille talking about maturity in some way, coming into that place, developing a self. You know, what is self? You know, I'm always curious about the question of being selfish. Remember you were accused of that as a kid? You're being selfish. Well, I mean, that would be a compliment in a way, but the way it's used means you don't consider the needs of others. And of course, we are a part of a planet. I consider the need of everybody around me, and most people I know who have any kind of maturity consider everybody around them. So they wouldn't shout loud, they wouldn't talk loud in a restaurant, because they wouldn't want to bother the person that's sitting next to them. They don't humble themselves either, necessarily. They just are there, like a tree. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
This is Lucia, and I went through 2 years of a contractor cheating me. I had two children that I adopted, and we had no home for 2 years, and then I had to pay back what the contractor cheated me from, which was like $130,000 that he owes me. And I had to take care of these two children, and I'm over 60, no place to live. My family could help little, but I really had to go to that poem, If, and find beauty and strength in that base of trouble that I experienced, and to see and to be grateful that actually opened up my eyes to see the goodness of the sky and the trees, the tree that you just mentioned. I found so much strength, and I got through, and a friend of mine contacted ABC, and I ended up with an extreme makeover home. And it was only because I listen to you always. I always listen to you, and I listen to my Bible, and my God, you're such a good man. You're a good man, and overcoming is the key. We never, never give up. We never listen to bad people who discourage us. We never feel puffed up and have to look the best in the crowd. I love you. Keep up the good work.
What's your name?
Lucy Ali.
Yeah, Lucia, right. You know, one of the things that you're saying, I mean, we think about it from our perspective. When you think about a town, and I don't, when you think about Haiti, or you think about Iraq, and you think about what happens when a person's town is bombed, or a village is bombed and they kind of look at the total destruction all around them and family dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow the spirit mm-hmm. of being becomes accessible.
Yes.
And somehow you grow out of that. You
yes.
come out of that. You're so absolutely right.
If you allow yourself to, and you don't feel the gloom and the doom.
Well, Lucy, you know, some people got to feel the gloom and the doom as part of it.
But
sometimes
that is the
end all. Bleed before you heal, you know?
Oh, true, true, true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I respect it all. Thank you for calling
thank
in.
You. I did overcome, though. They gave, ABC gave us a house, but had I given up or became angry at this contractor, I had to forgive him. And I was hearing messages from my creator to forgive him, to forgive him. So that was part of it. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hello. Armand?
Yes, I'm right here. You can
sorry,
talk.
This is Jay from Montclair. I won't keep you on long because I just talked to you last week. You said that you are not a teacher, but you are a tree. And I'll say to you that if you're a tree, you're teaching that you're a tree. So in other words, I'm a body, I'm separate than you. That's what you teach.
Yeah.
So everything is from that aspect. So everybody's a teacher and a student, a learner. But if you believe that you're a body and separate than me, that's what you're teaching. You're teaching you're a tree and I'm a tree. So if you're a tree, you are teaching that you are a tree and everything comes from that, a self-improving tree or somebody who falls behind, a tree that dies. A tree that grows, a tree that has flowers. You're teaching that you're a tree. So that's what you teach and learn. That's what you've learned, too, because that's what you've learned what you are. So from that aspect, we're all teachers. And I learn from you and you learn from me. But what I see you as is what, in a sense, is what you are. I believe what you are is, and then you are that. That's why we all have different realities in being separate. But teaching each other that we're the same and joined in union, then the tree goes and the teaching is continuous and a union.
Nice going. Nice going there, Eddie. Nice going.
It's always beautiful to listen to you because you always teach me. I always learn from you. And we teach each other the same way. You know, but the idea that you're one thing is you're teaching something.
I thank you. You know, I guess you're right because there's a whole globe, so it's geo, so it's geometry. You know, here we are, the study of geometry, which is the study of being a tree with other trees around the globe.
Thank God. Maybe we're one tree.
Thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank you.
There's a guy named Terrence McKenna who once did a study, and he was a specialist in the sacred mushrooms. He used to use mushrooms for psychedelic reasons. But one of the things they discovered was around near orbit, outside of the Earth's crust, is an orbit of mushroom spores. Now, these mushroom spores, for some reason, go, you know, somewhere like a mile outside of the Earth's atmosphere or something like that. And they can be found anywhere. And these mushroom spores, since they are spores, he believed had a communication with each other. And they, of course, there is some kind of communication, even if it's gravitational. And he said, in effect, he thought, of course, he thought by taking magic mushrooms, you connect with this universal knowledge. But he said, isn't it fascinating that there is something like mushroom spores that are connected all around the globe? And somehow communicating to each other. If that be true, he proposed, maybe we all communicate with each other in some way or other. Maybe that's part of the Diamo tree. Armand DeMille here, 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello there.
My name's Terry. I just recently got turned on to your show, and I appreciate it very much.
I'm glad, Jerry.
What you were talking about is the Socratic method, isn't it?
You can give it any name you want.
Well, that the answer is in the question.
Uh-huh. So, but Jerry, how about in your life, in your personal life, what is the biggest step that you've had to make for yourself, to push yourself? What is your huge question that you sit with? What separates you from the next step? And I have to fill in because, you know, you take some time to think on the air. And the trouble with WBAI is that when we have dead space,
I'm sorry.
They think that we're gone.
Yeah, you don't want dead air.
Not because it's something wrong with it. I like dead air, actually. I like hanging around in it. But you know, if nobody's talking, they sometimes throw the switch.
Okay, yeah. All right, well, I'll try to keep blabbing.
anyway, what's your big challenge, Eddie? Jerry, if you had a challenge in your life right now, what is the one that you are having the most difficulty with?
Well, it would be addiction, I would say.
An addiction to, what would you say it is addiction to?
Well,
is it love, substance, sex? What is it?
Substance, yeah.
Yeah, substance addiction. Very, very tough. Very tough, excruciating for a man, to step away from his addiction. Would you like a fresh perspective?
Yeah.
There's a book out there called The 4-Day Win by Martha Beck.
Beck, okay.
Martha Beck, she put something very, very interesting together about how to deal with certain things. She deals with food addictions a lot, but this... I've seen people who have worked with this a great deal, and they have found themselves able to take them through it a little more, because it's all about facing pain. You know, it's all about being with somebody or being able to get past the pain of not having the addiction fed on a regular basis.
Go on.
So that's what I'm saying to you. I'm saying to you that you're dealing with one of the great challenges. And the great challenge is being willing to face the pain.
Okay.
And the pain is not having that addictive substance keep you going, you know, as you have it. So how much could it hurt, you know? And it does hurt. It'll hurt tremendously, but you'll get through it. That's what you need. That's what you need to have somebody standing with you, you know. It's always good to have somebody standing by.
Well, thanks for your time, sir.
Thank you, Jerry. Thanks for calling in.
Bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
I'm so delighted you were talking about Kipling's If today.
Yeah.
Of the two things that I think were the most important to my life that I got out of school was learning to type in junior high school and being forced to memorize Kipling's If in high school.
Wow.
Because
forced to memorize.
It served as a, I don't know what to call it, but it was like fundamental for the rest of my life for another 50 years after that.
How do you like that? I mean, so the lesson was kind of going through your head. Now, get ready for this. You want to know my source? I said, I got to tell you the source of Kipling's If. It's going to be hard to believe. Among the soaps that you've ever used in your life, have you ever used liquid soap?
Not really.
You never use soap in a bottle, right?
No.
What do you like, the hard stuff, the cakes of soap?
Yeah, I use a bar.
A bar of soap. So there's a liquid soap out there, and there's a bar of soap. Dr. Brunner's, B-R-O-N-N-E-R, makes a bar of soap that's supposed to be very natural, and it's been around for ages, and it's terrific. Dr. Brunner is a funny guy. He makes a liquid soap, which is one of the best liquid soaps on the market. I mean, best, not as a commercial, but best because it's so good. He makes it at a 40-to-1 concentration. You could take it and use it the way it is, or you could dilute it. You could use it for shaving and doing your hair and everything according to him, Dr. Brunner's. About $10 a bottle. And it's good stuff. It's good stuff. But this guy decided that on the label of his soap, he would put in the finest, finest print all the messages that he felt like putting out to humankind. And believe it or not, Kipling's If is on the label of the soap bottle.
Oh, that's cool. He must have had the same reaction I did when I learned it.
So you pick it up. So the other day I'm picking it up, and of course, what am I doing? I'm reading Dr. Brunner's label, which has, I'd say, 1,000 words on it at least. And I was just looking down at it because I had just gotten some, and I said, what is this? And as I read it, it felt familiar, and then I realized it was Kipling's If. And what a wonderful thing to have on a bar of soap, on a bottle of soap. I think it's on the bar, too. I think he has it on the wrapper.
It's a very profound guide for your life.
It sure is.
It got me through a lot of things in my life.
Well, where do you remember a particular time when you had to go back and remember the words of the poem because you came into a significant challenge?
Well, you know, I haven't done it so much lately, but for decades, I would read the words to myself just all the time. Just as any, you know, when something went wrong, things were getting a little awkward. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you.
That's it. It's a beautiful thing.
If it just got me through so many things.
It must get you through relationships, that's for sure.
Well, I discarded relationships a long time ago, so I don't have to worry about them.
You gave up on them completely?
Well, I much prefer being alone, so.
Uh-huh, I understand.
I'm one of those guys you sometimes talk about.
Sure, that you prefer to be alone.
Yep.
Unless something would come along that might be better than being alone. Mm. And if it does, you'll learn to keep your head about you.
That's right.
Even when people are accusing you of making them crazy.
If you can trust yourself.
Thanks for calling in. Nice to talk to you.
Yep. Okay. Thanks for...
I'm real happy. Let's take one more call. One more call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. We've got time for one more. Hi there. You're on the air.
Mr. Oak? Armand.
Hey, Mr. Oak. That's me. Hi there.
Good day. Good. Armand, I remember not long ago, you were, first of all, a joyful, healthy New Year for you and all the staff.
Thank you.
And audience. You remember once you said about dreams, you wonder sometimes if they come true?
Yeah.
Well, I just want to get some quick ones because I know you're coming to the end of your program. I'll give you one. Remember Paul Gorman used to be on Saturday morning?
Sure.
One morning I woke up, I had a dream with him and Ram Dass. So I woke up and I called the show. I said, Paul, why did I have a dream with you and Ram Dass this morning? He said, man, that's far out. That's prescient. I was just with him this morning. I haven't seen him in over 2 years. I said that it had something to do with meditation of St. John the Divine. He said he was here to teach that work when people were getting ready to pass on, so one or people assisting people with the hospice. So there's that. There's my friend Peter, who's in Florida, reaching out to him. I'm reaching down, and he's reaching up. And that night, his house was on fire. He woke up during the fire, the only one in the whole family. Or Gertrude Casey, Edgar Casey's secretary, I went to see her. And
let me just tell you, since we're running out of time, and I enjoy hearing you talk, I mean, the primary thing you're saying is that you get through everything?
Oh, yes, I get through. But I'm just saying that I find that experientially I have had dreams that do come true, separated from the usual dreams of, you know, what's happened today and, what you know, a fantasy or something.
It's kind of magical at times. I want to thank you for calling in. I hope you call in at a time we have a little more time to talk. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. My friends, I will be back with you on Wednesday at 1 p.m., next Wednesday. I won't be here at my normal time on Tuesday, but you can check with my website, and I will I'll give you the schedule on there. And I look forward to speaking to you. If you need to get in touch with me about any of these issues, it's 212-757-4488. I'll be back with you on Wednesday at 1 p.m.